would like to thank the organizers for inviting me. And actually, what I'm going to talk about today has probably very little relevance to quasi-classical asymptotics, but nevertheless, I'm going to talk about that. So first of all, kind of in the title of my talk, there is rather sexy name, a quantum graph. I'm going to explain what it is, and it is actually a very simple object. So I'm going to start with a graph, say, I'll denote it by G. It's going to be a finite graph, but I'm going to treat this graph not as a combinatorial object, but as a singular one-dimensional variety. So this is just a set of vertices and edges, and there might be loops, something like that. And each edge is a one-dimensional segment, and there is a metric on it, but of course there is not that much of a choice for this metric. And so the only parameter that characterizes the metric on each edge is just its length. So there is V, this is a set of vertices, and E is a set of edges. And if E small is an edge, then L of E is the length of this edge E. Yes? One can think about it in many different ways. Where do they arise? For example, you can have, say, a graph on the manifold, and for example, a metric that is concentrated near the graph. And okay, but if I take it as a metric, then I can always reparameterize it in such a way that it's just a Euclidean metric, just ds square, and then the length becomes the only parameter. Okay. What? Yeah, it holds. Yeah, the triangle inequality, say, clearly holds. Say, one can define the distance between two points as the minimal distance of a path, if the graph, of course, is connected. And I'm going to talk about connected graphs, and then the triangle inequality is going to hold, obviously. Okay, so this is what's called a metric graph. This is a metric graph. And the metric graph becomes a quantum graph if one takes it together with a certain differential operator that is defined on functions. Say, what's going to be the space of functions? Say, for example, we can take the space, say, H1, and this is going to be the space I'm going to be dealing with, H1 of G. This is the space of, say, continuous functions that are defined on the graph, and a function on the graph, it means just a function on all edges, collection of functions on all edges, and these are continuous. So on vertices, the values, they agree. Say, this is F continuous functions, such that, say, the integral over the graph of the square of the gradient of F ds is finite. And what this integral is, say one can take the sum of the integrals over all the edges. Okay, so if one, say, takes, for example, this quadratic form, then one can define an operator, then this quadratic form gives rise to an operator, self-adjoint operator, and this is the operator I'm going to be dealing with. So the Laplacian is just the operator defined by this quadratic form. By this the Dirichlet integral, and say how does this operator act? So just a second. So delta f just on each edge is just negative d2 f over ds square. And f is kind of a natural length parameter along an edge. And what are the boundary conditions? So the boundary conditions are, and it's kind of rather easy to figure out. So at each vertex, let's take a vertex V, and then there are going to be a certain number of edges that emanate from this vertex, say 1 all the way to k, say E1, Ek. And then the condition is a Kirchhoff condition. Kirchhoff condition. And this is that the sum of the derivatives of df over, say, I'll write down dsi, and this is, say, s1 all the way to sk, it equals 0, say, I from 1 to k, and this should hold for every vertex v of the graph. So in particular, if the vertex happens to be a leaf, it has degree 1, then the boundary condition is the Neumann boundary condition over there. Of course, this is not the only possibility. Say, people study kind of different self-adjoint extensions. For example, one can impose the Dirichlet boundary condition on the leaf. For example, at the vertices, one can impose the condition that the sum of the normal derivative is proportional to the value of the function, and this proportionality coefficient can be taken different for all the vertices, and one can study different boundary conditions. The function is continuous. The function is continuous. So the values agree. Yeah. So it's just defined as a function in just one-dimensional variety. Okay, but today I'm going to be talking about exactly this problem. And the question I want to address, tell you about the question I want to address, I want to say that this problem for kind of a finite graph, it has a discrete spectrum, and the first eigenvalue is, of course, 0. It corresponds to the constant function, and then there are lambda 1, lambda 2 eigenvalues that go to infinity. What? No, not necessarily. What do you mean a linear function? No. It's going to be trigonometric functions. Okay? Lambda 0 corresponds to a constant function. Okay. And now, the question I want to address is, say, what are the kind of extremal properties of the first non-zero eigenvalue? Say, on the class of the graphs with a fixed total length. So let's take graphs, such that the sum of all the lengths is fixed, okay, EI from E, and the question now, say, the extremal properties of lambda 1 of this graph. Okay. Before I go, what? Okay. Let me kind of answer the question. Before I'm going to formulate the result, before I'm going to formulate the result, let me do just a couple of very simple examples. The example number one, and this is, I guess, the simplest graph one can think of, it is just a segment. Okay? Just a segment of length L. And then, so the corresponding eigenfunctions is going to be what? Sine pi over L times S. And the corresponding eigenvalue, lambda 1, is going to be what? Pi squared divided by L squared. Sorry. Yeah. No. I, you are right. It is cosine. Okay? Sorry about that. Okay. So, but the answer for lambda 1 is correct anyway. Okay. The second example, so example number 1, and let me put 1 prime. It is actually kind of the same example. It is just kind of a linear graph, this type. Say, this is going to be the graph of the total length L. And in this case, kind of a trivial remark is that this kind of a linear graph, it is not different just from a segment, because if you have a function that satisfies the Kirchhoff condition, it's going to be an eigenvalue, an eigenfunction just on a segment. Now, the example number 2, which is also kind of simple example, is going to be the graph, kind of a star, that I'm going to denote by h sub k. It's going to have k plus one vertices and k edges. So this is v0, v1, all the way to v sub k. And the length of each edge is just L capital divided by k. In this example, one can actually easily compute what lambda 1 is going to be, and it turns out that actually the first eigenvalue is multiple. It has multiplicity k minus 1, lambda k minus 1, and it equals pi square times k square divided by 4, I guess, L square. This is going to be the value of lambda 1. And what's going to be the eigenfunctions? Let me just describe it in words. This is going to be kind of, on each edge, it's going to be a cosine function that equals 0 in the vertex. Say, all of them are going to be equal 0 in the vertex. You can take all these cosine functions, and so you have the Kirchhoff condition in this vertex. So when one takes a linear combination, they're going to be k of them. You're going to get a linear combination, and they're going to be one condition on the coefficient. So one's going to get a k minus one dimensional eigenspace. Now, this example, in particular, it shows that for lambda 1, there is no upper bound within the class of the graph of the total length, so one can look for a low bound. So I push this eigenvalue down. In the first case, there is no 4. Say here, yeah, so here in this case, here k is greater than or equal to 2. K is greater than or equal to 2. If k equals 2, exactly, if k equals 2, then it's going to be just a linear graph, a segment, and it's going to be 4 over 4 is exactly 1 that agrees with the first example. Now, the theorem, I'm going to kind of sketch a proof of, and basically give almost a complete proof. So the theorem is that for any graph, lambda 1 of j, lambda 1 of g, sorry, is greater than or equal to pi square divided by L square, greater than or equal to the eigenvalue just for a segment, and the equality holds if and only if this graph is either a segment or a linear graph, so basically when it is a segment. So equality holds for a segment. A triangle. What do you mean, triangle? In it? Ah, no, not required. If you take a graph with a single vertex in a loop, it's just the same as a circle, and if you do it for a circle, then you're going to get 4 pi square over L square, they're going to be a factor of 4, okay? So it's going to be greater. Okay. Let me talk about the proof of the theorem. So first of all, the first observation is that it's sufficient, and it kind of simplifies the argument somewhat, that it's sufficient to prove the theorem for trees. Say, first, a reduction to trees. Okay, so why it is the case? The eigenvalues are critical values of the Rayleigh quotient. So the Rayleigh quotient and this is just the integral over the graph of grad f squared divided by the integral of the absolute value of f squared. And the class of the functions is a function that belongs to H1. And suppose, let's go back to the first picture. Suppose that one has, say, a cycle. For example, here is a cycle. In the graph. Then I can cut this kind of cycle at some point, for example over here, and construct a new graph, kind of, this is going to be, I'm going to produce two vertices out of this point, and then for the new graph, we're going to have kind of any function of a new graph can be pushed down to the old graph. But the difference is that at this point, it's not required to be continuous. So we're going to have the problem for the same Rayleigh quotient, but for a larger class of functions. If one has a larger class of functions and one does min max, then one's going to get a smaller value. Say, so by, in this way, one can one by one eliminate all cycles. And we're going to do it keeping the graph connected, of course. And each time, the value of lambda 1 is going to be pushed down. So. No. I don't impose any boundary conditions here. This is a Neumann problem. I don't have to impose any boundary condition. No, this is true for any. This is true for any eigenvalue, not necessarily for the first one. It just is min-max principle for all eigenvalues, and you get the same Rayleigh quotient, but for a larger class of functions. So you're going to get all eigenvalues are going to be pushed down. But for non-connected graph, lambda 1 is going to be 0, because you're going to have you can have two different constants and two different connected components. So, of course, you're going to get a non-connected, but then you're going to push it down to 0, and this is not what I want to do. Because the class of functions, initial class of function, is the class H1, and in particular, at this point, it should be continuous. When you cut this point, when you cut it over here, and you produce a new graph with two new vertices, then it need not be continuous. So it's just a larger class of functions. So, okay. Now, this is it simplifies somewhat the proof. Now, let's go further. Now, the second thing, let's now restrict ourselves. From this point, I'm going to take a tree, and I'm going to take a tree of a fixed combinatorial structure. But there is going to be some caveat, and I'm going to generalize this notion of a fixed combinatorial structure a little bit. Let me explain. What do I mean by saying that? Let's take G is a tree, say, of a certain fixed combinatorial structure, gamma. So the only thing we can vary are just lengths of the edges. But I want to have we have the sum of all the lengths equals a number L capital, but I want to have a compact set over which we're going to take minimum, and so far, literally speaking, this length must be positive. So I want to allow this length to be equal 0. What does it mean that the length of a certain edge, for example, of this edge, say this is a certain edge E, what does it mean that this length is 0? It means that the graph is going to be equivalent to this graph. I'm going to just collapse this edge, and this is going to be the graph that's going to correspond to the situation when the length of this edge equals 0. And I want to treat this new graph as a graph of the same combinatorial structure. Okay? So all graphs that can be obtained from gamma by a certain number of edges collapsed, I'm going to include into the class of the graph with the same combinatorial structure, gamma. The length equals 0. You can think of a constant over here, and the length equals 0, okay? There is there is no conditioning in the variational problem. The boundary conditions, they arise naturally from the variational problem. Variational problem does not contain any boundary conditions. Okay. Okay, let's go further. No. So far, I'm not talking about total length fixed. I'm going to talk about lambda 1 as a function of all these lengths. So let's put L1, say LK, where LJ is the length of EJ. So far, I'm not talking about keeping the sum of the lengths fixed, but then I'm going to minimize this lambda 1 on such a set. Now, a technical lemma, say lemma, let me formulate it, lemma, it says that when one of the lengths, or some of them actually, go to zero, then lambda 1 has a limit. And the limit is exactly the lambda 1 for this graph. Okay? So that, let's put lambda 1, let's put L1, for example, of 0, L2, LK, and by that I'm going to mean lambda 1 of this collapsed graph is exactly the limit when, say, tau goes to 0 of lambda 1, tau L2 all the way to LK. And this is, of course, very easy to prove. Let me just make a couple of comments. There are two things one can do, go in two directions. First, when you collapse, one looks for a test function. How one proves that? By taking test functions. Say, if one takes a graph where the length of this edge, say, let's put it E1, is small but positive. Let's take first an eigenfunction that corresponds to lambda 1 for a collapsed graph. Then one can obviously extend it to a function on this graph by setting it to be constant on the edge E1, and one looks at the Rayleigh quotient, and it's easy to convince yourself that you're going to have the limit. So in this way, you prove an inequality in one direction. A little bit more tricky is to go in the opposite direction. Say, to construct a test function on the collapsed graph from an eigenfunction on a pre-collapsed graph. Say, because here and there, it takes different values. Say, what you prove that these values are different, but the difference is estimated by constant times the length with an absolute constant. Okay, so the difference when the length of E1 is small, then the difference is small, and then you push it down by, say, keeping it, for example, as is on the top, and on the bottom, modifying it a little bit. You take a cutoff function and do a small modification. So, okay, I want to formulate this, and it's not to keep a constant length. At this point, I'm going to keep a constant length just in a moment. Now, this is a simple technical lemma. And now the second point is, and also not that complicated, is to compute a variation of lambda 1 if one varies the length of the graph. So, first of all, we're talking about lambda 1, so one has to take functions that are orthogonal to a constant, but it is easier. Let me just find it, because I may forget. Okay, there exists an optimal graph because you have a continuous function and a compact set. Okay, so you have a continuous function and a compact set, so it assumes minimum somewhere. So we're going to take a graph, the graph on which it assumes minimal value. Now, let's take, say, J min, the minimizing graph. We assume that the combinatorial structure is fixed. We take the minimizing graph within this combinatorial structure, and we're going to prove an inequality, and because the combinatorial structure was taken arbitrary, so this inequality is going to hold for all graphs of all. The length, the sum of the lengths equals L. What? No. Now I take the minimizing graph within this, because otherwise, of course, you can pull the length to infinity. Okay. Let me take it in a box. Okay. The minimizing graph within this combinatorial structure, and I'm going to take the red equation that minimizes lambda 1, and it's going to be on the whole class of functions. It's going to be the integral of grad, say, q of f, of the grad of f squared divided by the integral of f squared, and minus 1 over L squared times the integral of F squared. So this real quotient, kind of the minimum, is exactly lambda 1. Now, for this minimizing graph, what we're going to do, we're going to take, say, two edges. Yeah, say basically for the original quotient, for lambda 1, we have to take functions that are orthogonal to 1. Here we can take all functions that not necessarily are orthogonal to 1, so you take just an arbitrary function and you subtract a constant to make it orthogonal to 1, you rewrite the Rayleigh quotient for that function and you're going to get exactly this thing. Okay? Now, let's take our minimizing graph, and let's take two edges, say E plus and E minus, and we're going to take the following variation. The length of this edge is going to be, say, L of E plus, original, plus a parameter tau, and the length of this edge is L of E minus, minus tau, to keep the total length fixed. Okay? Then, for the original graph, we've taken the corresponding eigenfunction that corresponds to lambda 1, and just we transplant it to the new graph by making just stretching along these edges. Kind of stretch it with the corresponding coefficient along this one and shrink along that, just linear change of variable. And we're going to compute, just on that function, the derivative of this Rayleigh quotient. And let me not bother you with the computation, because it's pretty much standard. T O of F tau at tau equals 0. And the result that one gets is the following one. So it's going to be actually 1 divided by the length of E minus times the integral over E minus of F prime squared plus lambda 1 F squared and minus 1 over the length of E plus times the integral over E plus of the same thing, F prime squared plus lambda 1 F squared. This is going to be the variation of this quotient, and because the graph G is minimizing, this variation must be zero for any pair of edges, because otherwise, either for tau greater than zero or tau smaller than zero, we're going to get a smaller number. So it's going to be, it must be equal zero for every pair of edges E plus E minus. Now, what are the consequences of that? Let's keep in mind that on each edge, our function satisfies a very simple equation. So this is just what? F double prime, I guess, plus lambda square, lambda 1 F equals 0 on each edge. On each edge. It means that on each edge, F is just a trigonometric function. So I'll put F equals just a certain amplitude, A of that may depend on the edge, times the sine of square root of lambda 1 S, and plus, let's take a certain number, say let's take A of E, where A is a phase shift, if we just start counting edge from a vertex. Okay, now, what this combination is, it's just A square, it is just A square. When we integrate, it's A square times L, we divide by L, this is just the square of the amplitude. A capital square. Okay, let's take here, sorry, let's denote it by B. I forgot what I put in my notes, and it doesn't matter. Let's denote it by B, not to introduce confusion. So it means that kind of our first conclusion is then the amplitudes of all these functions must be the same of all edges. Say, now, A of E equals constant. Constant. But we can do even more. We can make certain conclusions about the phase shifts. Let's take a vertex. Let me take just one vertex. One single vertex, and take all the edges that emanate from this vertex. Now let's take a look. Now, first of all, the values of the function, all this function on the vertex must coincide. Now, say we know that A of EJ, say this is E1, all the way to EL, this is a vertex, times the sine of this phase shift, B of EJ, it should be the same, it's constant. Okay, we can take A's are the same, so the sines of B's must be the same. So there is only two possibilities for each two edges, say either B of the phase shift B of EI equals B of EJ, or B of EI equals pi minus B of EJ. These are the only two possibilities that make the sine functions. From the same vertex. I'm talking about just edges starting from the same vertex. What does it mean? It means that if one takes the normal derivative along a certain edge of this function. So the normal derivatives for two different edges must either coincide or be opposite to each other. Okay. Of an oriented edge. Yeah, because when I take S, it should go from somewhere to somewhere. Of course, it is of an oriented edge. One has to be a little bit careful talking about oriented edges, but I'm just putting it under the rug a little bit. But so it means that df for each vertex, df over dsi at v must be either equal or opposite to the normal derivative to the derivative in the direction of the second edge. Now, so there are two possibilities. Now, first possibility, either all these numbers are equal to zero, okay, so either, and then I'm going to call it a Neumann vertex, so either df over dsi equals zero is going to be, I called it a Neumann vertex. Or if it is non-zero, then the degree of this vertex must be even. The degree of v must be even. And they're going to be exactly k edges emanating from this vertex, either the derivative is positive and the same. So they're going to be, let's put 2m. I use k as the total number, 2m. And there are e1, say, em such that df over dsi of v is a certain positive number, say alpha v positive, I from 1 to m. And for the rest of them, and it is negative alpha v when I goes from m plus 1 to 2m. Okay, and if two edges, if the signs of this derivative for two edges are opposite to each other, I'm going to call them neighbors, if they're going to have opposite signs. Now, say Vi and Vj's are neighbors if I from 1 to m and j from m plus 1 to 2m. Okay, and this is EI, yeah, thank you, of course, EI, EJ. Okay, and this is almost the whole story, because now we can do the following thing. So take this situation. Let me take our graph, our tree. Let's take our tree. Something like that. And let's start, it's a tree, it has at least one leaf. So let me start from a leaf. It's going to be a Neumann vertex. Now, I'm going to take the only edge that emanates from this leaf, and I'm going to come to a different vertex. If this is a Neumann vertex, then we're going to stop here. If it is not a Neumann vertex, then this edge has a neighbor. Then I'm going to take its neighbor. Okay, I'm going to come to a vertex. Either it is a Neumann vertex, then we're going to stop. Or it has a neighbor, we're going to take it a neighbor. Finally, we're going to come to a Neumann vertex, for example, to another leaf. Now, we're going to have a path, a linear path, and let's take a function on this path. At each edge, kind of the derivative does not break. So we're going to get an eigenfunction just on the segment, the length of which is the length of this part that is smaller than or equal to L, and there's the whole story, so lambda 1 is at least the eigenvalue of the Laplacian on this segment, okay? And the equality may hold only if the segment is a whole graph, okay? So this is basically the end of the story, so I'm going to finish a little earlier.